And go ahead and open your Bibles, please, to Genesis chapter 45, verses 4 through 8 for the text of our lesson. Genesis chapter 45, verses 4 through 8. Before we read this passage, the title of this lesson is not anything that gets people excited. Israel moves to Egypt. But that is what this is all about, except that's not what's behind it as far as the significance for us. And so I decided probably that I would have better titled this Divine Providence and Joseph, the life of Joseph, as the example that we're looking at of divine providence, how God operates in our lives without in any way interfering with our free moral agency, with the fact that we decide what we want to do and He allows us to do that, and then we reap the consequences of those decisions. And that even in the life of Joseph, at a time when there were still miracles that God worked upon this earth, there's very little miraculous in this. Most of these are just things that people would have said, well, that could have happened, and who knows what would be the cause of that. But we know from the Bible that God was behind it all. And that's the way it is in our lives, that God's not directly inserting His finger in time today by performing miracles, which would be the direct intervention of God in such a way that we could say, well, there's no natural explanation for that. That had to be the direct hand of God. But rather, He operates behind the scenes, but God still uses us and works in our lives without any way interfering with our free moral agency. And that's what Joseph is an example of, and that's what we're looking at some more this evening. Now, we answered one question last time we studied in Genesis chapter 45 about why Israel moved to Egypt. But there's a couple of other questions that I want to look at that are answered in this example of the life of Joseph that I believe have a good application, a good principle for us to think about. So if you will, read with me. This is the statement that Joseph made to his brothers in Genesis chapter 45, verses 4 through 8. And at the time that Joseph made this statement, he was 39 years old. 22 years had elapsed from the time that as a 17-year-old boy he was sold by his brothers into slavery, and they took him down to Egypt, and he went into Potiphar's house. There's already been 7 years of plenty that have taken place, and now 2 years of famine have taken place. And now, after the second trip of Joseph's brothers to Egypt, now Joseph is revealing himself to them. And they're very shook up, to put it mildly. Now in Genesis chapter 45, verses 4 through 8, and Joseph said to his brothers, please come near to me. So they came near. Then he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now, do not therefore be grieved nor angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth, and to save your lives by great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And He has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Now there's two more questions that we want to answer from this study of the life of Joseph as an example of divine providence. The first question is, why did the Lord select the sons of Jacob to be the heads of the tribes of Israel? Now, I hope that you're familiar with the fact, and if not, you need to go back and study more of the historical section of the Old Testament, that God had made the promise to Abraham that He would make of him a great nation. That was one of the three promises God made to Abraham in Genesis 12, verses 1 through 3 and 7. And that promise had been passed on to his son Isaac and to his grandson Jacob. And then Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel, and therefore the nation is called Israel, Jacob had 12 sons, and they became the heads of the 12 tribes of Israel. But now, when we've looked at those 12 sons in the first study of Joseph as an example of divine providence, they're not the kind of men that I would want my sons to be. I have three sons, and I'll tell you right now, I would just be absolutely ashamed if any of my sons behaved in the way that Jacob's sons behaved. And yet, these men became the heads of the 12 tribes that comprised the nation that God called His own nation until that time when they crucified His Son, at which time He took the kingdom away from them and gave it to His people who come to Him by faith in His Son, Jesus Christ. And so why is it that God chose these 12 men to be the heads of the 12 tribes? And of course you could say, well, God had made the promise to Abraham, but I want you to know that God made that promise to Abraham because He knew, and this is from Genesis chapter 18, that Abraham would command his children and his household after him if they would keep the word of the Lord to do righteousness and justice. So God's not doing this precipitously. He's not doing this just the way the Calvinist folks think, that He just picks out whoever He wants to. There was cause behind that. God knew about Abraham, the kind of man that he was, and He knew that he would command his children, his household, be the kind of people they ought to be, so God could bring upon him the promises He had given him. And so we still have before us, why is it that God chose these two? And I can go a step further. Israel was in the wilderness and they were worshiping the idols, God threatened that He would destroy them and raise up from Moses a nation. He could do that. That'd be no problem with God. But still He chose these 12 men to be the heads of the 12 tribes of Israel. Well, I believe there's a great lesson for us. First of all, we'll look at Joseph. Joseph is the most obvious. By the way, Joseph received the birthright, and his sons inherited, along with their uncles, the brothers of Joseph. So Joseph had the double portion, and Ephraim and Manasseh, and by the way, Ephraim is the younger, Manasseh is the elder, but Ephraim and Manasseh, the sons of Joseph, were heads of tribes along with their uncles because of Joseph receiving the double portion with the birthright. And so Joseph figures in this also. So why is it? Now, you know, Joseph had to be molded also, and this is something to think about. Joseph is a wonderful character. And he is a young man that I would be very, very proud to have my sons to behave the way he behaved. But when you go back to when Joseph was quite young, and we don't know exactly how young he was in some of this. We know he was 17 when he was sold into slavery in Egypt. But how old he was in some of this, we're not sure. Because he goes back and tells behind this. But in Genesis chapter 37, verses 2 and 3, we read of a young man who's spoiled by his father. That's not too unusual, is it? And that's not Joseph's fault. But his father, Jacob, Israel, picked him out to be his favorite son. That was a tragic mistake, and it was the main thing that got Joseph into the troubles that he had. And he gave him that coat of many colors. And so Joseph, as a spoiled son, as one who was the favorite of his father, he had to be molded also in the way that God could use him. And God did mold him that way. And then you remember in Genesis chapter 37, verses 5 through 10, Joseph had those two dreams that he told to his brothers. And I believe it's pretty obvious that you have a young man who has some pride that he needs to overcome, because in his dream he saw the 11 sheaves that would belong to his brothers falling down before his sheep. And I'm sure he was very happy to tell that dream to his brothers, and it caused them to envy him even more than they already did, and to hate him even more. Then he had another dream in which the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bowed down before him. And so again, there was some pride there in the fact that he wanted to tell those dreams to his brothers and tell those dreams to his father, and caused again his brothers to envy him that much more. So Joseph, as a young man, as a teenager, there was still some molding. And of course, how many teenage boys do you know that are just maturing everything that God would want them to be, and they don't need to be molded anymore into the light? I never met one like that. Now, there's more molding than that. Doesn't mean they're bad boys, but we just have to understand they're still kids. And God has some molding to do on them, just as he does in other folks. And so God molded Joseph. And of course you know that Joseph was sold by his brothers into Egypt. And then the sterling character of Joseph begins to shine forth in Genesis chapter 39. Verses 1 through 12, Joseph, of course, was sold by the Ishmaelite and the Midianite traders into Potiphar's household. And Potiphar was the chief captain of Pharaoh's guard. He was a very important official in Egypt. But because God was with him and Joseph was faithful in the house, and obviously Joseph was able, he rose to be over all of the house. And Potiphar didn't know anything that went on in his house, except he knew what food was set before him. That's pretty good arrangement, isn't it? And Joseph took care of all of that. He was the business manager. He was the steward, is what he would be called in New Testament terms, of the house of Potiphar. And so Joseph was learning to manage. He was learning to be faithful. And he was learning to be one who was dependable, which of course is another way of saying faithful in what he was doing. But then, of course, you know, when Potiphar's wife cast a covet of longing eyes, on lascivious eyes, lewd eyes on Joseph, and wanted Joseph to commit adultery with her, then Joseph would not do it. And he shows great virtue. And virtue is moral courage. It's the courage to do what is right regardless of the temptation. When people do right, when nobody else would know about it, and there's great pressure to do wrong, then they're showing virtue. Now, of course, and Joseph knew that God was seeing this, and this is what we must all recognize. And he said, how can I do this thing? My master has put everything under me. He doesn't know anything goes in the house except what is set before him. And everything is left in my hands, and he's kept back nothing from me except you because you're his wife. How can I do this and so sin against God? Now, Joseph may have been a teenage boy, and he was, but he was a virtuous teenage boy. He had the courage to do what was right, even when there was great pressure to do what was wrong. Great temptation, no doubt. He had the same temptations as far as sexual lust that other teenage boys have, but he resisted that. He was virtuous and he was faithful. And what did it get him? Well, it got him thrown into prison. You understand, you remember that. Because, of course, Potiphar's wife lied about him when he fled from her, and she kept his coat in her hand. She presented that to her husband and lied about Joseph. And I believe if her husband really believed her, he would have had Joseph killed. And the reason Joseph was left alive because he knew that she was a liar. But nonetheless, he had to honor what his wife said, because that was his wife, and he couldn't have her shown to be a lewd woman before all the household. So Joseph was placed in prison. But even in this unfair situation, could you imagine? The only reason he was thrown into prison because he did what was right. And even in that situation, he was faithful to the Lord, and he showed friends that he learned more about management skills, and because he was faithful in all that he did, because the Lord was with him in all that he did, then the keeper of the prison put him over all of the prison. And you remember that the butler and the baker of Pharaoh were cast into prison. And Joseph was so faithful in discharging his duties, and so concerned not with himself but about others, that when he saw them, that they were depressed and they were down, then he asked them what was wrong with them. See, he was paying attention to the men that he was in charge over. He was doing his duty in a situation that was an unfair situation where he never should have been placed. And so he was faithful to the Lord. He was faithful in his duties. He was considerate of others. He was growing. He was being molded into the kind of man that God could use to do his work. He was becoming a great man. And so finally, when Pharaoh had those dreams, and the butler remembered about Joseph after 2 years of having forgotten him. I don't know how he could have forgotten Joseph. Obviously, the butler was a very selfish man. But after 2 years, he remembered Joseph, and Pharaoh had the dreams, and he told him about Joseph. And Joseph stood before Pharaoh and told him the meaning of those dreams. You remember that Joseph didn't say, "Now I'm very brilliant and I can tell you what these dreams mean." And by the way, he did this also with the butler and the baker. He said, "Do not the interpretation of dreams belong with God?" He gave God the glory. He didn't take any credit for himself. How many preachers like to bask when somebody compliments him? "Yeah, that was a great sermon, wasn't it?" "Yeah, indeed." Give God the glory for the truth that is presented. And just present the Word of God. To God be the glory. And that's what Joseph did. And then when he told Pharaoh what he needed to do was to find a wise man who could put over all of Egypt, and who could see that during the years of plenty they could take up a fifth part of the produce of the land and save it for the years of famine. And he didn't say, "I'm that man." Now, by the way, he also told Pharaoh the interpretation of dreams belongs to God. He didn't say, "You need to choose me to do that, because after all, God's molded me to do this by putting me over Potiphar's house and by putting me over the prison." He didn't say anything like that. But he demonstrated wisdom by the way that he replied to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh then said, "How could we find such a discerning man as you?" So God had molded Joseph to be the kind of man that he could use to do his work. But you know what? God didn't just mold Joseph. God molded Joseph's brothers also. Those brothers, when you come to the end of this story, were totally different men than they were at the beginning of the story. Now, Joseph's brothers, we've already talked about this from Genesis chapter 37. They hated Joseph. They could not speak a peaceable word to him. They were envious of him, and they were so mean, just plain old mean, low down, that they, first of all, they wanted to kill their brother, except Reuben, the eldest. He was the only decent one among the lot at that point. And by the way, Reuben was the one who earlier had committed adultery with his father's concubine. But at this point, Reuben is the only decent one of Joseph's brothers. He's the one that said, "Oh, don't kill the lad. Don't shed the blood of our brother. But cast him into this pit." They had dry pits that they used as cisterns, but they were dry at that time. So they agreed to do that. And of course, I'm sure that the other brothers did just leave him there to rot. But Reuben intended to come back and rescue him. But at the proper time, or not at the proper time, you know, the Ishmaelite and Midianites came by, and Judah was being wicked here. Judah said, "Why, here's a chance to make some money. Instead of shedding our brother's blood, just sell him to the traders. They'll take him down to Egypt and sell him." And by the way, they sold him for less than the price of a slave. They sold him for 20 shekels of silver. Under the Old Testament, a young male would bring 30 shekels of silver. So they didn't think much anything of their brother. They sold him into slavery. That's a mean bunch of men. And they took his coat of many colors and tore it and dipped it in the blood of a kid of the goats. And they took it to their father and said, now notice how they replied, "Is this your son's coat or not?" They didn't say, "Is this our brother's coat?" They didn't say, "Here's our brother." Now they didn't tell a lie, they acted out a lie. That's just a mean bunch of rascals. Of course, there's the law of unintended consequences comes in here. They didn't realize the impact that would have on their father. They learned a very hard lesson there. And that very hard lesson is what caused them to start turning around when their father was so overwhelmed with grief that they could not comfort him. And he said, all of his children arose to comfort him. He would not allow them to comfort him. I said, "I'll go to my grave mourning for my son Joseph." And they had never realized what their low-down, mean stunt would cause their father. They should have thought about that, but they weren't thinking about those things. But that was emblazoned in their conscience. Now you fast forward 22 years. And Joseph's brothers, Joseph is head over all the land of Egypt. Only Pharaoh is above him. And his brothers have been caught in that famine too. And by the way, this is the providence of God as well. The famine in Egypt was caused, physically speaking, by the lack of rains 4,000 years to the south. 4,000 years. 4,000 miles to the south. In around Uganda, where I go once a year. Because that's where the Nile River starts. And the rains around Lake Victoria in East Equatorial Africa is where the Nile River, 4,000 miles south where it flows into the Mediterranean Sea, that's where the Nile River gets its water that causes it to overflow its banks and flood and cause the silt to be there and to water the land. And they weren't getting rain 4,000 miles south of there. For 7 years they didn't get the rains. But that's not the way it was in the land of Canaan. The land of Canaan, their rain came by west wind that came off the Mediterranean Sea. There's no connection between the Nile River not overflowing its banks and a drought, a famine, in the land of Canaan. It's totally unconnected. But both things happened at the same time. That's the finger of God. But nonetheless, they were also in a famine in Canaan. And so after 2 years of that, Jacob sent his sons down to Egypt to buy some grain. You heard about they have grain in Egypt. And Joseph was the one who was in control of selling to the strangers who came in. And here they came. And you can just see Joseph decked out as an Egyptian, a man who was very high up. And here his brothers come in and they're dressed the way that Hebrew shepherds and herdsmen would be dressed. And 22 years have transpired. And now Joseph is no longer a teenage boy. He's a middle-aged man. He's changed a lot. He don't look anything like they look. And nothing like they remember him looking. They didn't recognize him, but Joseph recognized them. And they came in, and I don't know if Joseph just concocted this plan on the spur of the moment, whether he'd planned this all along. I don't know. There's no revelation on this. But Joseph had a great plan. He was going to test his brothers. He said, you men, and by the way, this would be just like an Egyptian. They didn't trust the people from back there in Canaan. They thought that's where, when there was an invasion of Egypt, often that's where it came from. They didn't trust those folks. And you're not here to buy grain. You're here as spies to see the naked. Oh no, oh no. We're honest men. We're all the sons of one man. We're brothers. And there's one brother who is dead. And there's a young brother still back in the land. Y'all, you're lying. Now, they told the exact truth. And they revealed. See, Joseph now can use his knowledge of them without them suspecting that he was Joseph. And so, you're just spies, and I'm going to tell you what you'll have to do. I'm going to keep you in prison, and you can let one of your brothers go back and bring your youngest brother down here. And if you don't do that, then I know you're spies. Now, Joseph could bite that way. You know what he thought of his brothers? This is a bunch of mean rascals, and they'll do the same thing to my brother, my full brother Benjamin, they did to me. And I can get Benjamin down here, and I can save him from them and keep him down here. And so after 3 days, Joseph said, I fear God. And so you can go back, except one brother has to stay. And as they were talking among themselves, they didn't know Joseph could understand them. See, this is an Egyptian, higher-up official. They didn't know Joseph understood every word they were saying. They were talking among themselves. And Reuben, the eldest, said to the rest of them, I told you. You should have known. Now, what's happening? The blood of our brother, God's visiting this on us. I told you not to do that. And for the first time, Joseph knows that Reuben, the eldest, really didn't want that to happen. That Reuben was not in that plot to have him sold down there. And so when he decided to bind one of them and let the others go back, he didn't have Reuben, the eldest, bound. He had Simeon, the next to the oldest, bound and kept in the prison. They had to go home. And they couldn't come back without their brother Benjamin. That way Joseph could rescue Benjamin from them and keep him safe from them doing the same thing to Benjamin they'd done to him. And so the time came, and I'll quickly go over all this. The time came when they had to go back and buy some more. You remember how that Joseph had their silver put back in the mouths of their sacks? They didn't know how that happened. And the time came they went back, but they had to take Reuben with them, even though Jacob did not at all want Reuben to go. Did everything he could to keep Reuben from having him, but they finally had to take Benjamin down there with him, even though Jacob didn't want that to happen. And so when they went down, this time Benjamin was with them. And they again appear before Joseph, and he knows them, and they don't know him. And now they're shocked. The servant tells them that this ruler wants them to go home and eat with him. Oh no. Our silver was left in our sack. He's going to throw every single last one of us into prison. We don't know how that happened. This is terrible. And so as they're going into Joseph's house, they appeal to Joseph's servant. They said, "We don't know how this happened. The silver's left in our sack. We don't know how that happened." He said, "It's all right. I had your silver. Your God gave you silver in your sack. Don't you know those men are totally confused and scared half to death?" And so Joseph has a great feast for them. And he has them seated in order of their age. And they couldn't figure out how in the world he knew to do that. And he gave five times as much to Benjamin to eat as he did the other brothers. And they're all trying to figure out what's going on here. And they're allowed to buy their grain. And their silver's put back in their sacks. And they sure didn't have a clue how that happened. And Joseph's silver cup is placed in Benjamin's sack. And that way Benjamin can be brought back, arrested and taken back to Joseph, and Joseph will keep him safe. And they go their way, and then the servant sent forth and stops them, and they go through all the sacks. And there it is, the silver cup of the great ruler in the sack of Benjamin. Now, if they had been the same men that Joseph had known 22 years ago, the same men that Joseph thought they still were, if they had been those same men, they would have said, "Well, Benjamin, tough luck, old buddy. You shouldn't have stole that cup. Looks like you get to go down there and be the slave. See ya." And they'd be gone back to Canaan. That'd be all there was of it. Wouldn't make any difference how it affected their father. We're out of here. We've got our money. We've got our grain. We're going home. But they weren't the same men. Surprisingly to the servant of Joseph, surprisingly to Joseph, they ever won. Loaded their sacks on their donkeys, went back to Joseph's house, and fell down before Joseph and said, "Here we are, we're your slaves, what can we say?" And Joseph said, "Oh no, I fear God. Only the one who stole my cup is my slave. But I said, you go home." And Judah, this is a great, great speech. I can't read this speech that Judah made to Joseph without getting tears in my eyes. This is from a man's heart. This is a man who is so changed, he's not the same man he was 22 years earlier. He fell down before Joseph, just like Joseph's dream said he would, and they've already done it several times, by the way. And he said, "Your servant, my father, had 12 sons. One went out from him, and he is no more. And now this other one, his life is bound up in this lad. And I was surety to my father, your servant. I told him that whatever happened, I'd bring Benjamin home. And so don't let Benjamin be your slave. Let him go home to his father. If he doesn't go home to my father will die of grief. You'll bring down the gray hairs of my father to his death. Just let me stay and be your slave." And you know what? I would have done the same thing Joseph did. That's when Joseph broke down and cried before them and revealed who he was. Those men were not the same men they had been 22 years older before. They had been molded by the hand of God into the kind of people that God used. There are some women, I couldn't say this back in Mountain Home, there are a couple of women that come to my mind. They're the age of my children, which is middle age, by the way. I'm an old man and my children are middle age. And that if you had known them 5 years ago, you wouldn't have wanted to be around them. One of them was drinking, probably doing drugs, living an immoral life. The other, I don't know if she was drinking or not, but she was living an immoral life. She was living with a man to whom she was not married. And those two women are both godly servants of God today. God has molded them by His Word into the kind of people He wants them to be. That's what God does. If we will let God work with us to mold us by His providence and by His Word, He'll mold us into the kind of people He wants us to be. When I look back at being a teenager, no, you're not going to hear about it. because I'm not proud of it. There was a couple of years in my teenage years that I'm not proud of at all. But I don't want to stand before God on the last great day as that teenage boy that needed to get his life straightened up. I want to stand before God as one who's been molded by the hand of God, by His Word and by His providence, into a man of God that God will be willing to own and to crown as His for all eternity. That's a great lesson I believe that we can learn from the life of Joseph. God molds us, if we'll let Him, into the kind of people that He wants us to be. One quick question, or I'll have to hit this quickly, I should say. One more question. Did it ever occur to you, Joseph was head, except for Pharaoh, over the land of Egypt for 9 years before he ever sent for his father to come to Egypt? Now you know Joseph loved his father, and Joseph was his father's favorite son. Why is it that Joseph, after he was in power in Egypt, waited 9 years to be reconciled before his father? It wasn't because he didn't have the power. When his father died 17 years later, 17 years after he'd come down to Egypt, his father died at age 147, then Joseph was allowed to go with him, with his body, back to the land of Canaan to have him buried in the cave of Machpelah. Joseph could have gone back to Canaan any time he wanted to after he became ruler of all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh allowed him to do it when he asked him to do it. He could have done that. Why did Joseph wait 9 years? Well, think about that. The passages are before you. I'm just going to quickly tell it for sake of time. When Joseph was sold by his brothers into slavery, Did he know that his father thought he was dead? Did he know that his brothers had taken his coat and torn it and dipped it in the blood of a kid of the goats and showed it to his father? Joseph didn't know any of those things. Jacob, Israel, was a wealthy man. He could have at any time, had he known Joseph was in Egypt in slavery, at any time, he could have sent one of his servants down there with the money and bought him out of slavery and brought him back to Egypt, to Canaan. But Joseph didn't know that his father didn't know that. All that time that Joseph was being faithful to the Lord, he was being faithful to the Lord in spite of the fact that apparently he believed that his own father didn't even love him enough to try to buy him out of slavery. Now, I don't want to hear about somebody who says, well, my family's been awful to me. Joseph was faithful to the Lord, faithful in every way that he was to be faithful, despite the fact that he was treated unfairly by his own family and had no idea that his father loved him as deeply as he had no way of knowing that. None of that was revealed. But finally, when Judah told him in that last great appeal, this one brother is dead and our father has mourned for him all these years. And our father, they thought he was dead. His father thought he was dead. Finally, when that was revealed, that's when Joseph broke down. But you know what? You go back before that. When Joseph was made head over all the land, he was given a wife, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On. And that he had had two sons, Manasseh first and then Ephraim. Have you ever looked up that word Manasseh, what it means? It means causing to forget. And do you know why he named his son Manasseh, meaning causing to forget? Because he said, God has made me to forget all my father's house and all my toil. He just wanted to forget his family. Now that's awful, isn't it? To be so terribly treated by your family, you just want to forget them. Just forget I ever had a family. And God made me put that behind me. But now, when Judah makes that beautiful speech that was from the heart, not rehearsed, not made up, right from the heart, when Judah made that speech, and Joseph knew that his father had believed he was dead, and his father mourned for him, he would not be comforted for 22 years. Then Joseph told his brothers, "Now you go back up to Egypt, and don't you stop and argue on the way. And you bring my father down here to me, because I keep him alive in Egypt." And when Jacob made it to Egypt, finally. Oh, by the way, when the news came from Joseph's brothers that Joseph was still alive in Egypt and he was ruler over all the land of Egypt, Israel wouldn't believe them. It says his heart stopped. He fainted. He couldn't believe it. But then we saw all the wagons that Joseph sent back with him. He said, "It is enough. I will go see my son, and then I can die." That's all. He'd have a good life if he could see his son before he died. And he went down to Egypt, and Joseph fell on his neck, and they wept a good long while. Joseph didn't know. Joseph, in all honesty, made some assumptions that were wrong. And we can do the same thing. Sometimes people know a little smidgen about somebody else's business and make all kinds of assumptions, and then make the ridiculous mistake of getting their fingers involved in somebody else's business when they don't have a clue what's going on. We need to not do such things as that. And don't be quick to judge other people about things we don't know about. Joseph was honest, but Joseph just didn't know that his father thought he was dead all that time. There's a great lesson to be learned there. All right, let's bring the lesson to a close. Let me ask you a question. If you'd been sold into slavery, and I had been watching that clock back there, you warned me not to do that. If I had been sold into slavery, if you've been sold into slavery, and your brothers had done that, and would you think that God was with you? And then if you stood for what was right and did what was right and you got thrown into prison for doing what was right, would you think God was with you? God was with Joseph all that time. Genesis 39 verse 2 and 3, the Lord was with Joseph. Genesis 39 verse 21, the Lord was with Joseph. Genesis 39 verse 23, the Lord was with Joseph. All that time the Lord was with him, using Joseph, molding him. Joseph didn't know that. He had no way of knowing that. Only after it was all over with, looking back, he could see the hand of God was in it all. It may be that when we come to the end of life's way and all kinds of bad things have happened to us, we can look back. We can say, "You know what? That was God doing that. He was molding me. He was making me. He was using people to accomplish. He was keeping people alive through Joseph and accomplishing even more than that." But you know what? God uses us also. He uses us to accomplish His will. Now listen carefully, the lesson's yours. He uses us according to the vessels that we are. If we are determined to do His will, regardless of the cost and regardless of what happened in this life, He'll use us as a vessel of honor to accomplish His will. If we rebel against Him, kick the traces, don't do what He tells us to do, He'll still use us. But He'll use us as a vessel of dishonor to our own condemnation. But He'll use us. He'll use us according to the kind of vessel we are. Romans chapter 9, verses 22 through 24, and then the lesson is yours. What if God, wanting to show His wrath and to make His power known, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath prepared for destruction, and that He might make known the riches of His glory on the vessels of mercy, which He has prepared beforehand for glory, even us whom He called, not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles? You're either a vessel of wrath or a vessel of glory, depending on how you respond to the Word of God. But God will still use you. He'll still use you to accomplish His purpose. but he'll use you according to the kind of vessel that you are. Be a vessel of glory. Come in obedience to him while we stand, while we sing.
Out of my bondage, sorrow, and I.